Welcome to Healing From Within. I am your host, Cheryl Glick, author of Life is No Coincidence, The Life and Afterlife Connection. As an energy healer and medium, I am constantly striving to improve my understanding of universal energy and how to positively harness this energy for us all to discover new ways to improve our health and life experiences. Each of our special guests brings their knowledge and life experience to help us further open our minds to greater possibilities for an improved human condition. Healing From Within is also a radio show designed to encourage personal self-investigation and self-mastery of emotions, offering examples of how to refine our individual thought processes to live in a more loving state of harmony and peace, thereby creating a more purposeful attitude for producing positive daily experiences. In today's episode, my very special guest, Betsy Otter Thompson, author of her newest book, Walking Through Illusion, and I will explore our own personal journey and search for answers to age-old questions of who we are, where we come from, and what are the benefits and rewards of a physical life. We will discuss using the spiritual laws of universal energy as the basis for living a successful physical existence. The law of attraction is an energetic law and rightly seen as action and reaction or cause and effect is the principle we will focus on today to understand fully how to implement it in our lives effectively to manifest or create what we need. The mirror theory will also be discussed today by Betsy, as it is a prominent aspect in her stories of people who are dealing with many life challenges. Betsy, welcome to Healing From Within.
Thank you, Cheryl. I'm delighted to be here. Thank you for inviting me.
It is such a pleasure to have just finished reading your wonderful book, Walking Through Illusion, which I may describe to our listeners as an emotional biography based on Jesus and those historical people who knew him and were influenced by the thoughts and ideas he expressed and the life he led, as they all struggled with human emotions, problems, handicaps, and issues of the physical world, creating either joyful or painful outcomes. Betsy, would you agree that my description of walking through illusion, while a simple one, is on target? And can you tell us more about how the idea for this book developed and also the main premise that runs throughout the book?
Well, your explanation was, just beautiful. And it is about the pulling of energy back to itself, which is basic physics. The action-reaction idea or the law of attraction, there are a lot of names for it, but it always basically is just the same idea that we all understand about what goes up, what goes down, what comes around, goes around. That's that basic idea that really runs our life, and this is a theme that runs throughout the book. And I believe it's the force that runs the universe. So the universe is always in perfect balance, and it's showing us how we live our lives. We live in perfect balance too, which means that whatever we put out into the universe emotionally is going to come back to us and others. It's not a complicated theory. It's just sometimes hard to recognize when we don't like what's coming back to us. But it's a very important idea because, it changed my life, turned my life completely around. Because I spent the first half of my life blaming everyone else for my problems. And then in the middle of my life, I decided that that kind of attitude hadn't really gotten me anything except almost being a bag lady. And so at that point, I decided that I was going to start taking responsibility for my life instead of blaming everyone else. And that's really when I began to notice that taking responsibility puts the power within you, because when you become accountable for what you have created, you can say to yourself, well, if I created this mess I'm in, then I can jolly well create something else. And that was where the change came in my life, when I realized that I was the seat of power, basically. Then I was powerful enough to create something other than the mess I was in. And this is what this is how the gift was finally acknowledged, because I also took responsibility for this gift that I have of being able to communicate with spirit.
I agree with you, Betsy. We can't always, we have to receive the experiences that come to us no matter what. But the choice of how we handle it, either in a positive or negative way, and blaming other people for anything that happens is a negative way, and not accepting a responsibility. So I agree with you wholeheartedly. That is something that once you learn can turn your life around completely. Betsy, when I read the preface to your book, there was a quote. It really moved me. Inspirational writers have different ways of explaining their experiences. Some call it channeling. Some call it the joining of conscious energy with the higher self or soul within. Another calls it a non-physical energy present in all things that are physical. And this quote comes from Abraham Hicks Publications, September 16th. And Betsy, at the beginning of each show, I try to observe connections in the form of coincidences or synchronicity to my guests, which I believe is guidance from divine energy placing us together in experiences that we need in order to help ourselves and others.
Right.
So on the very first page of your book, when I read this quote, I smiled, as September 16th is my birthday.
Oh, and my goodness. You're a Virgo.
And, of course, since we know there are no coincidences, it is no coincidence that you and I are here today together.
Right.
I'd like to ask you, I was going to ask you this question, but then I thought maybe it wasn't appropriate, but it was one of the questions that you sent to me, actually, and I will ask you, how and when did your gift of talking with spirit begin, and can you describe how that works?
Well, it began when I was 5, believe it or not, Cheryl, because my mother had a grandmother that she really loved, and she talks about her all the time, especially in front of me, because she said I looked so much like her. And I thought it was a definite asset that I looked like somebody my mother loved. So I decided that I would talk to her at night and see what else I could learn about her. And I didn't tell anybody I was going to do this, so nobody told me I couldn't. And so I had these conversations for, you know, a couple of weeks, and I was enjoying them, and I thought, well, if I can do this, everybody can do it. So I went to my older sister, and I told her what I was doing, and I asked her who she spoke to.
Did she have an imaginary friend also? Or?
No. Her reaction was rather traumatic for me, because she teased me for weeks about it, and I got so traumatized that I actually was afraid she would tell other people what I was doing, and they would react the same way. So I just completely, you know, forgot the idea, ended the conversations, and that was it. And it wasn't until, really, when I was in California about 25 years ago and my life was really a mess, that when I started taking responsibility, I thought that I would take responsibility for this gift and start to honor it instead of ignore it. And so I started asking questions, and I asked questions about things I was curious about, and I was curious about Jesus because I didn't believe everything I had been told was true about him, and I wondered what kind of answers that I would get if I asked the questions. And so that's how the book began. And as soon as I honored the gift and started using the gift, I said a prayer. I was very poor. I had no money. I was in a one-room apartment. It was roach infested. And I said, I want to do this. It was like a prayer, but it wasn't really a prayer. But I said, I want to do this. I want to honor the gift. I want to share what I can, but I need a job to support me while I do it. And 3 weeks later, I had the job that I had for the next 18 years. And
it was a very good job, wasn't it?
Good job, and put my whole life financially back in order. And also the job, you know, I worked as the executive assistant to the chairman and CEO of Castle Rock Entertainment, and then went with him when he went to Warner Brothers as the president. And as in the job that I had, it was like day after day taking responsibility for what you did. So it was like the universe said, oh, okay, if you're ready, we're ready, so let's go. And then everything fell into my life that supported me while I wrote, but also everything in the that I was dealing with was also supporting the growth that I had to go through, which was about taking responsibility. And so it was a very interesting twist in my life and very educational, and I'm grateful for everything that I went through. And I want to say that even though, you know, when I was spending my first half of my life blaming, I try not to judge that time in my life, because I absolutely had to go through it in order to get where I needed to get. I had to sort of reach the bottom before I was willing to say, okay, nothing else has worked.
Well, I think you also had to have those life experiences so that you would understand when these changes came where where you had been and where you are now.
Yeah.
So it's very necessary to have every challenge, and they all work out in the end to bring something very good. Did you channel through a guide when you were writing this book?
Well, I consider it to be the energy of Jesus, but it doesn't really matter what name you give it, because as my book talks about all the time, everything that, you know, a name is just part of the illusion. It's the feeling that is really everything. And the reason the title has Walking Through Illusion is because it's for something to be real, it has to be real whether we're in our bodies or we're out of our bodies. And the only thing that's real both places is emotion. So everything else we see is illusion. And illusion is anything that could be here today and gone tomorrow. So we come here in our bodies to experience the illusion in order to expand the part of us that is real, or the love in our hearts.
Or our spirit and our soul. Yes,
same
the
idea.
Love, all the same. Betsy, I didn't find your book to be a religious description of Jesus and all the characters that were with him, but a very human and personal evaluation of the universal life issues that confront our physical and soul well-being even today. Did you intend your book to be a religious book?
No, it's not a religious book. The book poses actually that we don't take our beliefs with us when we leave here anyway. We take the love we found from having them. So the book makes no attempt to preach religion or to agree or disagree with the Bible. It's not about that. It's the purpose of the book. It's not to debate who is right and who is wrong about what happened then. The purpose of the book is to encourage people to live what is right for them now.
In the physical life, while expanding their spiritual and soul essence.
Right, exactly. Yeah.
Because that's what they're taking with them.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know much about the Bible, to tell you the truth. I only know what you learn in Sunday school. And I didn't even do any research on the book until after I had written it. So it was a very bizarre way to go about it, but that's the way it happened for me.
Well, Betsy, our childhood and our religious training, it seems to me, is very similar. As a Jewish child, I was raised to believe that we had only this life, and the concept of eternal life or soul life was not taught to me. But I do remember, however, when I was about 6 years old, telling my mother that she didn't need to actually see me in a room to know I was present. She could feel my essence or energy and would know me without my body. Of course, not understanding the concept of the survival of spiritual energy after a physical life, she didn't know what to make of my declaration of eternal life, much like your sister didn't know what to make of the story you told her of talking to your grandmother.
Yeah.
So we had a very similar childhood in that way. Did you have any unusual understandings or other experiences as a child? Or was it your religious training that brought you to search for that inner essence of love and peace?
I don't think it was the religious training, because I think the religion actually turned me off for a while. I felt that it wasn't answering my questions, and it was also that religion doesn't give you a choice about what you want to believe. It tells you what you're supposed to believe, and I don't take well to that kind of instruction. So I like to think for myself.
Well, many religions offer a belief system handed down by others, and spirituality is just finding an understanding of your personal essence and connection to the divine energy on a very personal level, without beliefs, but a true understanding within you.
Right. And I don't want to insinuate that I'm against, you know.
No, no.
I'm not. What I believe is that God is in every religion if the people practicing it have love in their hearts. That's what I believe.
I agree absolutely. Everything can be an uplifting experience.
Yeah.
But we have to find our own way, and we're all unique and different, and we can't always be told what will work for us. We have to have that experience and make the choices and learn through our choices, however they turn out, good or bad. Betsy, while reading your bio, I realized you were involved in radio and the media for many years, and you worked at Castle Rock Entertainment, dealing with very creative and expansive personalities. And my own daughter, Stacy Glick, was a child actress, and so I traveled with her for 10 years in that same creative environment. She and I met many people of sensitive and with creative urges. Betsy, were there any special people or mentors who helped you develop an interest or understanding of the spiritual laws of energy? And is there a story that goes along with getting this book published?
Well, I have to say that Marianne Williamson was instrumental in getting me initially, because when I was in California, I went to one of her lectures, and to me the lecture was about taking responsibility, and so I kept going back to hear her speak, and she was very instrumental in my spiritual path, and so and I love her as a person.
I think she's marvelous, and I've read several of her books. There is one, I don't remember the title, about love. Do you?
The Return to Love?
Yes, that is it.
Yeah.
Beautiful.
And with the with how the book got published, I had the agent that I had contacted said that she had a publisher in mind for this book, but she didn't have, if this publisher said no, she didn't know who else she would approach for me, and did I want her to give the book to this publisher knowing that, and I said sure. So she sent it off to the publisher, and it wasn't very long till I heard back that he said no. And he said no for three reasons, and he gave her the reasons, explaining why he had turned the book down. And my agent emailed me, and she said it's very unusual for a publisher to say why he's turning a book down. They usually just turn it down with, sorry, it's not right for me, or something like that. So she shared those three ideas with me. And after I kicked the pillow and got angry and cried for a while, I looked at his suggestions more carefully, and I realized that they were really, really good suggestions, and I could see immediately how they would improve the book. So for the next 3 months, I worked on the first three chapters, initiating his ideas into those three chapters. And at the end of that time, I emailed my agent back, and I said, I thought his ideas were really wonderful and really inspired, and I told her what I had done, incorporating those ideas into the first three chapters, and I attached it to the email and asked her if she would look it over, and if she liked what I had done, would she consider resubmitting it to the publisher? So she emailed me back, and she said she had looked at it, she thought it was better, and she was going to send my letter along with the attachment to him. And so then 3 weeks later, I heard back, it wasn't 3 weeks, it was more like 3 months I heard back, and he said he had changed his mind and wanted to publish the book. So I want that to be an inspiration to all those writers out there who get, you know, I've had many rejections, and I know all writers get them, but if you get any suggestions on how to improve the book, and I don't care if it's from a publisher or from an editor that you hire, to listen carefully to see how the book, you know, those ideas can help you, and maybe you can turn things around for yourself.
Well, perhaps they're being placed there for a reason.
Yes.
Yeah, to improve the book, to get it right before it gets published. I think that's a great story. Betsy, one of the questions you asked Jesus in your book was what walking through illusion meant to him. I love the answer. Can you answer that? And also, can you explain how life and our individual experiences are similar to a theatrical play?
Ah, you love that.
I love that.
Yeah, that's it. We're actually on, when we come into here, the stage of life, I think Shakespeare talked about it first, you know, that we're all players on the stage. And I think we come here with a role that we want to play, and we come here with the players we want to play with. I have this image of that I love to imagine, that before I came here and when I was planning my journey, I was surrounded by people I loved, and we all wanted to come back here and play the game together. So I said, well, here's a challenge I need, And so then somebody else pops in and says, ooh, well, I'll give you that challenge because I need to learn something about that too. And so we're all sort of planning the journey together. And maybe you were saying, well, I want to be a radio host, so I'll be there for you when you need to get on the radio. So I'll be a guest on your radio. And so here we are. And
probably so.
And I think that we all have these roles and we all have goals when we come here. We have spiritual goals or growth, you know, we want to expand our hearts and expand the part of us that is eternal. And so that's what we come into the illusion to grow, to see if we can see past the illusion to what is real, or which is our loving hearts. And that's what I believe our journey is all about.
And I also think that we have a contract, or we make promises to each other. And we try to follow these promises to fulfill our destiny. And as I say, I know life is not random, and that many of the experiences and people that we're dealing with are there to help each other. Yeah. And even sometimes when a person is a challenge or difficult in your life, they may be giving you the greatest opportunity to grow and get past negativity or poor behavior, or see things in with a new perspective and in a more creative way to bring more love and to bring more hope and joy and everything wonderful into your life.
Yeah, I totally believe that the biggest challenges are probably the people who love us the most. And you know why? Because who else would care? Who else would care that we're going to grow, that we grow, unless, except the people who love us the most. So I really believe
that. So they challenge us. They challenge us. But absolutely, we must change ourselves. Nobody really can make those changes, no matter what they point out, until a person is ready and able to go within and to see things in a way that will work better for them. No one is going to do it for them. They have to do it themselves. Most of us, talking about that actually, most of us wish for change in our own challenging situations, and also change for those people we deal with. Can you describe one of your characters? This was Bartholomew, and there was friction, and that he had in problems, and you might address how judgment and prejudice affected him. I know that he found a way to see past some of the problems he was working on, and many of the characters in your book have situations that they're working on that they find a way to clear it for themselves.
Yeah, I think it all comes down to, with regardless of what we're going through or what the characters in this book were going through, it's about the honesty to say that the people with us are a gift to us and not a curse, that they are with us to help us see ourselves. And so change doesn't come from changing anyone else around us. Change comes from seeing how the people around us are reflecting our own behavior and then changing our own behavior to create a different mirror.
And I think in his story, that's what he found. He found his own truth, that healing for all his problems was an inward journey. The deeper he went within, the less he needed without.
Yeah, I think that's true for all of us, because the gold mine is within. I mean, we all know that if you look back on your childhood, what do you remember? You remember the incidents that had a lot of emotion around them, because there are millions and millions of moments in our childhood or in our life that we don't remember. And we don't remember because they didn't have anything emotionally to impact to us or any kind of emotional message. So it is our emotion that is here to grow and to expand and to remember that essence within. So everybody's journey, I believe, is about this, about seeing the mirror, being honest about what the mirror is. If you don't like the people who are with you, then you need to be the person you want your mirror to be. I think that it's always about when people come to me and they say, well, I want to find my mate in life, and I say, well, write down on a piece of paper all the qualities that you want this person to have. You want them to be considerate of others. You want them to honor you. You want them to be respectful. Write them all down on a piece of paper and then start giving those qualities to others, because that is the way you create this person in your life. You are an energy being, and whatever you are putting out, you are attracting back. So you must take the action yourself.
I think you said at some point in the book, you don't marry the person you love. You marry the person who mirrors your love.
Right.
And I would think that to mean, correct me if I'm wrong, But I think that means that if you are less than loving, if you are selfish, if you are self-absorbed, if you are angry, you will marry someone who reflects some of that behavior. And then you will both have to find a way, if there is something else that you want, that you have to correct in yourself so that the other person can see that and respond in kind. Yeah. Would that be what it is?
Exactly. That's exactly what it is, Cheryl. And I wrote that in the section of the book that at the end of each chapter I have this area where I talk about how the ideas in the chapter impacted my own life. And that's in one of the ends of the chapter about how I had to learn those lessons. And that's one of the lessons I had to learn.
It's a very important one. And and your mirror theory, the mirror theory is absolutely truthful, because when you see in another person something that feels less than good within you, it's because somewhere down the line you acted that way, or you saw parents who acted that way, and it didn't help you in the direction that you wanted to go. So you don't want to deal with it, but you must deal with it, because you must eliminate it from your own way of behaving so that you won't see it any longer in anyone else. Is that so?
That's exactly the way it works. You have to change your own behavior to attract that behavior back in someone else. It's the same idea. In fact, I lived a personal experience with that myself. When I was in California, I had this woman in my life when I at work who was very patronizing toward me. And it was really getting me down. So I went home and I made a list of all the ways her behavior was making me feel. And then I, you know, belittled, like I couldn't make a decision, like I was inadequate in my job. So then I said, well, who am I making feel this way? And the minute I asked myself that question, I realized who it was. It was a friend of mine who was going through a lot of changes. And every time she came up with an idea about how she thought she should go forward in her life, I would poo-poo her idea and tell her what I thought she should do. And the truth is, I didn't have any idea what she should be doing, you know. And so I realized how I was being rather patronizing with her. And also, when I was getting these ideas in the beginning, they were changing my life, and I was so touched and deeply moved by how these ideas were helping my own life that I thought everyone should have them. And I was, you know, acting as if, well, what's the matter with you that you don't get it? So it was like a very patronizing attitude. And so I realized that as soon as I realized all this, then I could change my behavior. But I couldn't change my behavior until I acknowledged that it was my behavior.
Absolutely.
So then I changed my behavior, and this person who was patronizing, she stayed in my life because she was there at work and I couldn't do anything about it. But what happened was when I had changed my behavior, her behavior didn't affect me anymore. It was as if I have this aura around me that represents everything I'm putting out into the universe. So if something came toward me that I wasn't putting out, it bounced off my aura.
Yeah, absolutely.
No impact.
Well, as a Reiki healer working with universal energy and all these laws, I often suggest to my clients that they need to allow, accept, and surrender to whatever problem or obstacle or illness they have, as they are all opportunities to conquer a fear, a misconception, or a belief that no longer works for them, just as you're saying here. Often when they do this, these conditions change, and then again, healing comes from within. When I was also learning about hands-on healing and spiritual communication, I was once told by a religious leader that I should be in the temple learning Torah, and I responded, any way to God is the right way. And, of course, you know, I believe, as I think you do also, that God and the divine spark of life and love is within each and every one of us. And, therefore, that spark connects us to all in spirit and to everybody here on the earth plane. So we must follow our own path and our own truth. And, Betsy, can you answer any ways that you believe people on their path to true healing and love, what ways might they incorporate into their life to help them?
I think it's really about listening to what is right for you. I mean, there's no way to tell other people what they should be living, because I don't have the faintest idea what other people should be living. I only know that you need to be honest about what your life is right now, because that's the only way you can change it. And you have to be honest about what it is in your life you don't like and why you don't like it, because only from the honesty do you put yourself in that position of power to change it? So I don't.
Well, maybe, Betsy, they need to focus on ways to find happiness and joy, whatever it is, music, theater, art, charity work.
Well, I would say this. If you are in a religion or a group of people and it isn't making you happy to be there, then you have to ask why you continue going.
Oh, absolutely. They should find what makes them happy and joyful and peaceful and healthy, and that is the way and that is the path for them.
That is the path. But then you have to say, but life doesn't always run completely smoothly, so when things don't run smoothly, that's when you need to ask yourself, you know, what you're putting out there that is creating this discomfort for yourself? Because when you cause dis-ease in others, you attract dis-ease back.
Yes. The mirror theory again. Let us just for a minute discuss the concept of death as it is probably the biggest fear most human beings deal with, and that fear undermines the quality of life. Oh, I know how I feel about this, but would you like to say what you think about?
Well, I don't think death exists. I don't think energy cannot be created or destroyed.
I agree.
So the energy within us is just on a short little blip of a ride right here in the humanist now, and after it leaves this journey, it will go on to whatever else is the enlightening to it, whatever evolved it needs, wherever it missed finding love in this lifetime, it will create another opportunity to find that love. So
it's like the circle of life. It
yeah.
doesn't have a beginning and it doesn't have an end. It just transforms into a different dimension of energy. So we've answered that very simply and very clearly. And I want to thank you, Betsy, for being here with me today on Healing From Within. And to learn more about Betsy Otter Thompson and her new book, Walking Through Illusion, please go to www.BetsyThompson.com, and you'll be in for a treat to read more about her. In summarizing today's show about accepting our energetic inner life and living our own truths while expanding in a greater sense of love from within, may I say that the greatest gift to ourselves is aligning to this inner energy and allowing and accepting whatever obstacles or situations or people present in our lives, as they are all, each and every one of them, opportunities to choose to grow beyond prejudice, fear, anger, betrayal, complaints, or memories of the past, as any negative emotion keeps us stagnant and unchanging. We therefore are each of us, the beauty, the hope, the love from within, and that love and healing from within can bring us the greatest quality of life. I am Cheryl Glick, host of Healing From Within, and please go to www.CherylGlick.com to learn more about energy healing, spiritual communication, and also about my book, Life is No Coincidence. And join us for our next show with another very special guest to explore the fantastic world of energy being.